Rabbi Dr. Wiener, do you need to share a screen or are you talking?
Yeah, I'll share my screen in just a moment. Thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure and a joy and fascinating to listen to the presentations today and honored to be part of this and to learn from all of you. I want to share, you know, we're talking about how we've dealt with the pandemic in a supportive pastoral way, so to speak. And even though I have a doctorate in clinical bioethics and my interest is in, you know, bioethics, but I'm primarily coming to you today as a chaplain. That's my primary role. That's what I do in the hospital and trying to support patients and staff throughout difficult times. And, you know, these past 2 years have been definitely in that category. And maybe I'll frame what I want to share with a story. When the pandemic began, remember we shut down here on March 13th, and we had an initial, you know, pretty significant phase. In fact, we had actually had the first COVID patient in California in our hospital, and our ICU filled up very quickly. And, you know, it was sort of chaos, as you all remember, and no one really knew for sure who's supposed to do what and what's going to happen and how long is this going to be for. And a lot of people in the hospital started, you know, around the world, started working from home, and other people didn't have that option. And amongst the chaplains, you know, here in our office, we started talking like, well, where do we go? Because they said only essential workers should be in the hospital. And they kind of left that for everyone to figure out, are you an essential worker or not? Well, obviously you want to be essential. We want to be essential, but also people were afraid. And we had to kind of decide, and no one was really telling us, like, here's what counts as essential and who should be at the bedside of COVID patients, and here's who should not. We kind of lean towards the side of, well, we want to be there. I mean, there are people who are suffering, and if we can help them, we want to help them. Of course, if that's not what the hospital wants us to do, then we won't. And on one of those very first days, I remember getting a call from the ICU, from our COVID ICU. And there was a Jewish patient who was dying, and his family couldn't be there at the bedside. They wanted the rabbi to go say vidui at the bedside. So I thought, okay, well, you know, now I'm being asked to be there, and I want to be able to do this for the family. And again, this was like the third day since we had shut down. And in fact, actually, it was just the second day. And I remember going up to the ICU there. And there was literally at that time an armed security guard at the door, only admitting those who were considered essential workers. And I walked up to the guard and I just like started tried to walk past him in the room into the unit. And he said, where do you think you're going? I said, well, I was asked to see a patient. I'm going to see the patient. He said, who are you? I said, I'm the chaplain. He said, no. This is for nurses and doctors. That's essential. Chaplains, I don't have that on my list. So I was a little bit, you know, disappointed, and I just thought, well, I guess it was decided. We're not essential. And I thought, am I going to argue back? I guess not. I mean, especially he's armed. I'm not going to fight with him. And then all of a sudden the nurse pops out the door and looks out and says, Rabbi, there you are. We're waiting for you. And I look at the security guard and he says, oh, okay, go on in. So I went in and I went into the room and I said, vidui with the patient and helped out with the nurses, you know, to position the body and everything once he died. And I went back down to our office and I said to all the chaplains, so we were wondering, are we essential or not? It has been decided. We are officially essential. And everyone was excited. A couple people were not. They said, well, I'm nervous about this. We said, you know what? If you don't want to, go home. You can work from home. It's okay. But those who want to be at the bedside still during COVID, I think that we are needed now. And let's stay here. Let's stick it out. Let's see what we can do. And a lot of our support shifted to caring for staff. Of course, we continued throughout the pandemic to be at the bedside with patients. We felt it was important because they were so isolated, and especially when they needed religious rituals. And it was really a comfort, and it was so sad to see people die all alone. Obviously, we understand the reasons why visitors couldn't be allowed into the ICUs at that time, but we still wanted to be able to provide comfort and support when we could. And when we turned our focus to staff care, this became some of the very significant questions that we had. Because how much should we be risking ourselves, first of all, for the patients, and then what is our role in supporting the staff? So I just want to share two sources in my 20 minutes, two sources that kind of guided me. You know, so I'm the director of our department at this time. Unfortunately, I had to make difficult decisions. My staff was looking to me to guide them, and how much risk should we put ourselves into? How should we guide our staff? And so first, when it came to the patients. I want to share with you a source that came to my mind. I might be way off. I might be way off that this was not the right source. But it's just what came to my mind right away when I thought to myself, how much risk should we put ourselves into? And it's the Radvaz, responsum of the Radvaz, you know, chief rabbi of Egypt. I don't know if that was official, but that's what he was called, the chief rabbi of Egypt in the 15th century. And he was asked a question. In fact, I'll put it on the screen. I'll put on the screen at least his answer, because it's fascinating, and I think it's relevant. The Radvaz was asked the following horrific question. I was asked my opinion, what to do if the Saltone, right, the Pharaoh, I don't know, the prince, the leader of Egypt, says to a Jew, you know, in a sort of anti-Semitic way, kind of playing games with the Jews, you must allow me, you random Jew, allow me to cut off one limb, cut off your arm. You won't die from that. Oh, if you don't let me, emit Yisrael chavercha, then I will kill another person from your community. I'll kill a Jew. So your choice is, give an arm or someone else dies. Keep your arm, but one of your community members will die as a result. This source, as you can imagine, has been quoted for many years in relation to the discussion about organ donation, right? How much risk should one put themselves, their bodies, literally into in order to help another person. Actually, just as a side point, I actually heard it quoted recently in relation to Israel's role with the current war in Ukraine, right? There's this whole debate, and I'm not going to go there, but just to share, you know, how many ways this source can be used. You know, there's this whole debate, is Israel being supportive enough of Ukraine or too neutral, and, you know, the threat of Russia. So some have quoted this source for politics. So what is the Radvaz answer? The Radvaz's answer is fascinating. I won't read the whole response here just because I want to show you what he says. And it's been quoted halakhically in the organ donation debate, and I think it was relevant throughout COVID as well. He argues, Darcheha Darchei Noam, in the second paragraph there. The Torah says, the ways of the Torah are ways of pleasantness and peace. V'tzarich, and this is actually quite an interesting line here, V'tzarich shemishpatei Torahtenu yu maskimim el haseichel. The Torah must be logical. It has to make sense. What is logical? The hasvara, and right, reason. How could we imagine that someone should be required to blind themselves or to cut off their hand or their leg in order to save another person's life? He feels it goes against logic and the ways of peace for one to have to injure themselves so significantly to save another life. Hilkach, eini roe et tam ledinze. I do not think you should be required. However, Ella, midat chasidut v'ashrei chelko mishiyuchal amod b'zeh. But if someone does do this, they are pious. They are praiseworthy. Unless, v'im yesh safek sakana nafashot, if they might die as a result, meaning it depends on how dangerous it is. If it's really life-threatening, which, by the way, having someone's arm chopped off in Egypt 500 years ago, that might have been life-threatening, right? So if it's sakanat nafashot, if it's life-threatening, then not only is it not pious, hare ze chasid shoteh. That is a pious fool. The sveka dide adif mivade dechavre. Your doubt is more important than their certainty, and therefore, even though you could save their life, the Radvaz argued, we would not be required. So the way I guided my staff, and I hope it was right, I mean, we discussed this, but we felt, look, as long as we can follow the guidance of our medical staff and we can be safe and we can wear the proper PPE, and this was obviously an issue at the very beginning when there was insufficient amounts of PPE. Should we use it? Should it go to us when the nurses don't have enough? Okay, and then it should not. But, or at least unless there's ways we can minimize how much we use. But if we can be safe and we can be careful, and especially utilizing chaplains who do not have, you know, health conditions, health concerns. That's why some people who had concerns did not want to put them in danger. So maybe in that case, it would not be obligatory, but it would be midat chasidut. It would be pious. So that's what we felt. Don't risk your life, but if you're willing to engage in this behavior, it's pious and therefore a good thing to do. And therefore those who felt comfortable and were able to engage in the proper health precautions did so. The second question was more complicated. How do we guide the staff? You know, the hospital I work in, I heard Dr. Wolpe talking about this earlier this morning, or at least here it was in the morning. about Jewish hospitals. You know, so here I'm at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. It's a Jewish hospital. So I had a role to play in some of the decision making in terms of HR policy for our staff. You know, as the rabbi of the Jewish hospital, they wanted me to help provide some guidance. Not that I had the final end all be all to say, but at least, is there some Jewish wisdom we could offer to help guide us in staff care? And I also want to share with you the source that I utilized for that, and also the practical conclusion that we made based on that, very specific in terms of numbers of hours, literally, staff were asked to work and how many days off they're asked to take based on this piece of Talmud. So here's the source, and I'm very curious to hear. You know, definitely people might disagree with me with all this. This is just what I utilized, and so that's what I'm sharing with you both to share what we did, and especially to hear your feedback and critiques. So the source begins in the Talmud in Ketubot. The Talmud in Ketubot 58 says as follows: Amar Rav Ilai. Rav Ilai said, "Beusha, in the town of Usha, the rabbis gathered. Hitkinu, they made the following declaration: Hamevazves, one who shares their charity, one who dispenses their money, al yevazves yoter michomesh, should not give more than 20%, more than a fifth. In other words, there is a mitzvah to give maaser, to give a tenth of one's earnings to tzedakah, but they should not give more than a fifth, not more than 20%." Tanya Nami Hachid, the Talmud says, Hamevazel al yevazel yotze michomesh, why shema yitzarech libriot? Because if you give more than 20% of your possessions, you yourself might become poor. And now this is referring, obviously, this is talking about tzedakah. It's talking about money. How much money should I give of my salary? What does that have to do with staff care, self-care during the pandemic? So there has been a tradition amongst rabbis for many years to apply this principle not just to financial concerns, but to personal concerns, to actual emotional well-being, to mental health. I'll give you one of the earlier examples, not the earliest by any means, but one of the earlier examples that I found to be fascinating and quite profound. It is Reb Moshe Feinstein as follows. Reb Moshe Feinstein was asked, as in this case, Nishalti be'echat she'achol be'machlat shtut. I was asked by someone, and remember, Moshe lived in America, this is the 1980s, I know that's not how they refer to mental health in Israel today. I think they call it Briut HaNefesh, right, or Machlat HaNefesh. But anyways, he's referring to someone who's struggling with mental health struggles, right? So someone who has mental health struggles, v'hu b'beit cholim, and they are in a mental health facility. They are getting treatment for their struggles. V'nirpeh, and they're doing well. They are recovering. Aval harofim omrim shetzarich liot sham od eze shavuot tachat hashgachatam kedei shelo yitkalkel chas v'shalom. But the doctors there feel that this patient needs a few more weeks. The patient's doing well, but is not yet what we would call you know ready to be reintegrated into society. He needs a number of more weeks. The problem is, this was in Elul, and Rosh Hashanah is coming up, and this patient's concerned. The doctors are making me stay longer, but I want to hear the shofar. It's an important mitzvah to hear the shofar. Can't I get out of here early so I can go hear shofar? He asked Reb Moshe Feinstein, what should I do? Moshe answers, and I think this is a stroke of brilliance. So they said, "Im srichim lo tziu misham kedei shikai mitzvot shofar, shi beit cholim yefshar. Can we release him from the beit cholim, from the hospital, early so that he can hear the shofar?" Because in that particular hospital, it was in Cedars-Sinai, they did not have shofar available for the patients. So here's his answer. Shafti, I responded. In my opinion, ein tzrichim lo tziu. You do not have to take him out of there. Ki alase gam ones mamon yot michomesh nechshav ones lepocho. When it comes to mitzvahs ase, one is not required, as we just read, to spend more than a fifth of their financial well-being. Well, if you don't have to spend more than a fifth of your financial well-being, if that's nechshav ones lepocho, v'ulai gam bepochemo, and sometimes even actually less than a fifth, so now just skipping quotes a few sources, v'im kain, and here's the main line here, v'im kain, kol shekain ze, certainly in this case, she'adif la'adam af michomesh mamon, that a person will be willing to spend much more than a fifth of their financial means. V'yot, and probably much more, shehayem motzi litrapeh, in order to be able to be cured, to be healed. Av kol mamono, including probably all the maishim, nechshev ones mi mitzvah aseh de shofar upatur. It's the onus of the shofar, of a, which is a mitzvah aseh, and therefore they are patur. They are not required to fulfill that mitzvah because of the concept of hamevazves al yevazves yoter michomesh. So in other words, we have this principle that not only do we not have to spend more than a fifth of our finances for this, is by the way, it applies to many mitzvot. So example, the classic other example is with the etrog. The etrog, if someone could only find an etrog, it was like this in sometimes in Jewish history, right? You couldn't just go to the store and buy an etrog, where today we have hundreds to choose from. And there were times, especially in colder places in Europe, where, you know, you don't have so many available. And what if there's only a couple and they cost hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars and you don't have that, the means? So the rabbis said, then you don't have to. So you won't have an etrog that year. But it's not just about money. It's also related to a person's emotional well-being. They don't have to give of themselves so much that they can't handle it emotionally, not just physically, but that it's too much for them to bear. And so in order for this person to be able to engage in their continuation of their mental health recovery, they are not required, maybe not even allowed, to leave the hospital to fulfill a mitzvah. So, and this was applied, by the way, this did come up during the pandemic. I saw this in one place. Rabbi Hirschel Schachter from Yeshiva University wrote a number of responses about the pandemic. And one of the questions he was asked was from the Chevra Kedisha. Chevra Kedisha, one of their big questions was, you know, to do a tahara, to do the ritual cleansing on the bodies of those who had died from COVID. Of course, it's a great mitzvah and a great merit to have this ritual washing. Is it really, you know, necessarily a mitzvah? Is it a requirement? And the members of the Chevra Kedisha were concerned, especially, you know, prior to the vaccine, and, you know, there were no therapies, and they didn't want to, should they risk themselves in order to wash the bodies of the deceased, which is really coming into close contact, and it's not for the sake of healing. It's one thing for a nurse or a doctor who are doing so for the sake of, you know, attempting to heal a patient, but should the Chevra Kedisha, and Rabbi Hirschel Schachter wrote in his responsa, that they are not required to, and the reason he gave was the Chomesh reason. He said that is giving more than a fifth of themselves in order to fulfill this mitzvah. It's not required. So how did this apply in the hospital? How did we apply this? Because, you know, this was a big struggle. As you know, I don't have to remind you. I mean, on the one hand, people were being reminded of the Hippocratic Oath and all the, you know, the social contract with humanity that physicians have taken, that, you know, to risk themselves in order to care for their patients. And there is a kind of a warrior mentality of, you know, we're going to go in the trenches and help. But then there was also a lot of burnout, a lot, as we know, in many professions. But I'm talking about the hospitals now. There was a tremendous amount of burnout, tremendous amount of people feeling, their families were suffering. People were afraid to go home to their families. I know here at our hospital, I'm sure this was happening around the country. The hospital rented out the whole hotel next door, and many staff members were just going to the hotel. They're too afraid to go to their families after caring for COVID patients all day. And many couldn't bear that and ended up leaving the profession. So I advised our HR and our staff as follows. This was a bit, you know, way out on a limb here, and so that's why I really am curious to hear how much you disagree with me, but it was well received. I said as follows: if we're going to take seriously this mevazves al yevazves yoter michomesh idea and tell people you're giving of yourselves, I mean, that's what you're doing. You're in the healthcare profession. You are giving of yourself. You are putting yourself at risk, but there is a limit. We shouldn't give of ourselves too much. We have to also protect our well-being. We have to be in this for the long run to be able to be there. Especially healthcare providers have become especially essential because, you know, we need them throughout multiple ways, and we can't lose them. So I said as follows: if we can't give more than a fifth, more than 20% of ourselves, so let's say a person works on average 50 hours a week. So I told people, you need to make a rule for yourself: no working more than 60 hours a week. Once you go over 60 hours a week, you've given more than 20%. That's more than Chomesh. You have to have a limit. You cannot go over 60 hours a week. Okay, sometimes something comes up. It's a very busy week. But on a regular basis, it would be taking yourself too far, going past the Chomesh to work more than 60 hours a week if you normally work 50 hours a week. What about vacation time? If one normally takes 14 days of vacation time a year, they should not take less than 11 days. That would be giving more than 20% of themselves. They should not decrease by more than 20%. So we sent out the message. Everyone needs to make sure to not work more than 20% more than their norm. In other words, if you work 50 hours, don't work more than 60 hours a week. You may not. You have to protect yourself. You have to take breaks. And for your vacation time, you must take still at least your 11 days. Make sure to get that time off. And so this was how we tried to give a practical application of this principle, where people are encouraged, and Jewish law encourages us to care for ourselves, have limits to care for ourselves, to not go too far, and to actually put numbers behind that so that it has some teeth and it actually can be implemented practically. And that was our strategy.